Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome into another edition of Slow Your Roll. We are back with our regular lineup. Jesse Caulfield, Yaki Way report writer.
Regular lineup, all two of us.
Yeah, back in the building so I don't have to talk into the void once again.
It's fun. Did you ask a lot of questions?
I don't remember.
Okay.
You gotta find a way to talk. I mean, if you're asking a question, you're asking it like
no, I know.
Like jokingly.
But
like I've made my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm just asking you to think about it on your own so I can take a break here.
Yeah.
For half a second.
No, I understand.
And gather my voice.
That's probably what I would do. Asking a lot of questions to nobody.
Yes. That's what you gotta do.
Yeah.
You gotta just kinda figure it out. I don't know. It's different. Different type of vibe. I'll tell
yeah.
you that right now.
I bet.
Transitions are weird too.
You're telling me.
But anyway, today we will talk on Cody Bellinger's signing. We'll bring back Fair and Foul with a couple of stuff. Gerard Mayo, some comments to the media, talking, the new head coach of the Pats. Small things. I think they're a massive red flag warning sign, though. And I know you're starting with some hockey. We'll talk some Bruins and the joke that is the NBA All-Star Game. But with that, Yaki Way report writer, get us started.
Yeah. We'll talk Bruins. Yes, we will.
Yes.
All right. Well, from before we get to Bruins, I mean, yeah. I'll mention the Bruins a little bit in this. It's just going to be inevitable. Mm-hmm. But, almost took a picture there. But, so I've said it a couple times on the show, but I kind of want to give, I'm not going to call it a deep dive because it's only so deep I can really get on this, especially this time of year. But I want to explain and really tell the masses that, like, you need to get on this. Mm-hmm. You really do. I am not a gambler. Mm-hmm. I do it a little bit for fun, mostly like nothing big, $5 bets mm-hmm. here and there. Very rarely have I ever gone over even $10 mm-hmm. for a bet. But this one, let me tell you. It's my biggest bet ever, actually. That's how confident I am. Because like I said, I'm not very good at it. I'm not consistent with it, so I'm not really going to build this. I don't care enough. I don't care. Because, I mean, it's... I'm not going to go into... Well, one day I will have a gambling opening, and I'll go a little more deeper into my problems with and all that stuff. But one of the main problems with I have it is just I'm not good at it. I don't want to waste all my money on it. So when I stand here atop the internet, and I shout down to the people being like, listen, I know what I'm talking about in this one. There's a feeling in my heart. I know this. The numbers add up. The whatevers are there. Anyway, it's like what I said last year. It's just a feeling in my heart. I just know it. I said going into the playoffs, the one team I don't want to face if you're the Bruins is the Florida Panthers. They have an X factor that just stands out to me that I just can't not see, and it just screams in my face. This team's going to win the President's Trophy and needing to throw all your money in that direction.
Okay.
Reasonably.
Reasonably. I know.
Yes.
Don't be irresponsible.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So right now, they're in fourth place in the entire league. Mm-hmm. They are only 2 points back of leading the President's Trophy race. One of those teams ahead of them, I'll talk about them later, the Bruins. One of the teams you have to jump. You got to win the division if you're going to win the President's Trophy, which means you got to beat the Bruins for the division. I don't know. I love that chances right now. Again, I'll go into the Bruins a little bit why it won't be them later. But let's just say the Bruins, they just can't close out a game. They're going overtime a lot, which is fine. Like, you get a point out of that. You get 1 point out of that game. You salvage that game even if you lose it. But that's happening a lot, and that's going to tire you out down the stretch. You're going overtime a lot. And the Panthers are—they're just hot right now. They are, and they're closing that gap. The other team, the Rangers, I called them out right after the All-Star game. I said you're probably not going to win the division. Now they've righted their ship a little bit, and Hurricanes are just kind of cruising. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Rangers will win the division. I still don't see that team strong enough, second place right now, tied with the Bruins, for the President's Trophy. I just don't see it holding. They've gotten to this point a lot because of great goaltending, and although I like the starting goaltender, they've had a strong push from old man Jonathan Quick that's really helped them. Not maintainable. And also the team, although star-studded, Artemi Panarin, Alexis Lafreniere, a couple others, it's just not, you know, it's not quite the star power that, like, even the Bruins will put out there. I just see the Rangers. You know, they'll be up there. They're just not going to – no one's talking about them. No one's looking at them. Second place, no one's looking at them. And then, like, you know what? Good. Anyway, and then the big team, the Vancouver Canucks. First place right now. Again, only 2 points ahead, though. And a lot of people are surprised with the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, I am myself. The past 2 years were bad for Vancouver. No one expected this. To me, this is actually more of what they were supposed to be a couple years ago. Like, you know, this is them actually reaching that young talent potential they've had for a little while now. I think this is actually more of a little more what they're supposed to be. President's Trophy? I don't think so. I think they're a little playing out of their shoes, taking advantage of, you know, Vegas not quite playing to their potential. I think that's what that is. Mm-hmm. Vancouver also has the best goal differential in the league at plus 52. So, you know, they're good. They're good. They are good. Second best goal differential in the entire league. Florida Panthers at 51, one behind.
Florida is now, and obviously I know when you first put this on the show, that they were like plus 700 or 800, I think.
Well, I'm going to go over that, like the fluctuation of all that.
Well, you know they're now the betting favorite to win the
That doesn't surprise me at all. Actually, yeah. I meant to check that.
Now,
I was going
now
to
it's still plus 300, but they are the best odds of all of them.
Well, you know what? With that, let me get to the betting odds, because this has fluctuated a lot since I've brought this up to the people. Mm-hmm. When I first noticed this, I didn't say anything at first because I was still, you know, you talk about how Vegas knows. They talk about a lot with football. I don't think Vegas knows with hockey. I just don't think they're educated enough yet, which doesn't surprise me. Vegas, they only just got a hockey team themselves. It's America. Anyway, so when I first noticed it was plus 800, this was like a month before I even went to Florida. And I was like, oh, wow. I like Florida's odds to win the President's Trophy, but those odds are insane. And I was like, I'm going to pay attention to that, but I'm not going to touch it yet. Went down to 600 as the clap closed. I was like, all right, maybe I should have jumped on that. Went back up to, I think it was 700 when I put it on, like, my social media and stuff. I'm like, oh, man, I'm really liking this. Because then, like, it went down to 600. They won a couple games in a row, nine straight wins, and it went up. And I was like, listen, I don't know if Vegas knows. I'm smelling something in the water. Mm-hmm. Second I put the bet down, or second I really shouted to the world, because I was in Florida. I couldn't place the bet at the time. I got home. It was plus 900 because the game I went to, their losing streak, or the winning streak ended. I put it down on plus 900. I put $50 down. Biggest bet of my life. That's when they started to, like, lose again. It went up to, like, plus 1,300, I think, at one point. Mm-hmm. And then I, like, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago or something on the show, I said it was at plus 1,000.
Yes.
Vegas has caught up to what I've been saying. What was this, plus 350, you said?
300.
Sure, 300. Betting favorite, though.
Yes.
Vegas is on what I've been on for a little while now. Mm-hmm. And why have I been so strongly on this? One, despite the early struggles in the air, they are still second in goal differential. They actually have the best point percentage in the league, you know, having two games in hand and only 2 games or 2 points back of first place. That'll do that for you. Mm-hmm. So, but who are these people? Who are these White Florida? And, you know, it's a lot of Paul Maurice's system, the coach, just getting these guys to be, you know, a decent amount of skill players on this team, a lot of fast guys. But they all play with this grit. Mm-hmm. And that's what really does it. They have a 2-1-2 system, heavy forecheck, and they are big, thick guys, and it devastates these teams. So come third period, you know, the Bruins, one of the reasons why Florida's going to overtake them, Bruins can't really close out a hockey game. You pull the goalie, they can't take it. You know, the Panthers' way of playing is, you know, come third period, we're going to have more energy than you, we're going to be less sore than you. That really plays into, we're going to destroy the Bruins if this is a series. But, you know, just going game to game, I like the Panthers. You know, you got the Matthew Tkachuk. I don't want to call it bad, but not a great start. Not a Matthew Tkachuk start to the year. He's got 15 games in the last, or 15 goals in the last, like, 2 weeks. He's on. This is why they're taking off now. They have players like Sam Bennett who can, you know, dance his way to the front of the net to score a goal and at the same time put you on your ass if you try to do the same to him. People like Carter Verhaeghe. Sam Reinhart, second in the league in goals, had 6 straight games with a power play goal. Like, he is finally reaching his potential. obviously you have the goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky, who's had a wild career, but the heights he reaches are incredibly high, and he's on that right now. Sorry, maybe he'll hit the lows once playoff time comes. That's not what this is about. It's about winning the President's Trophy, and they are just built for it. They're built to tire you out each and every game. Again, the Bruins are maintaining this lead in the division because they're salvaging games by, well, you made it to overtime, you get a point out of that. Florida's like the opposite. They're staying in it by getting to overtime a lot, but they are the team that forces overtime and then twists your arm to get the win. Bruins are the opposite. Bruins are, you know,
they get out to a lead and then they hold on. Or and then when they tie it in the or like or they have a lead but they can't close it out in the end.
Never. And the Panthers are coming up on them. Now, obviously, Vancouver's in the West. They can't really, you know, maybe they play him again. I'm not looking at the schedule. So you can't really, you got to hope Vancouver loses. But I said this, I think the West is going to consume itself. Ever since Edmonton changed their coach, they're one of the best teams in the league. I think that's going to, they're
going to. Might be interested, according to BetMGM, the Canucks are not even the second best odds.
Who are the second best?
Was it Bruins.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So clearly they think your thing on the West.
Yeah, no,
there's
I think
many good teams.
There's, you know, Avalanche have fallen off a little bit because of injuries, but I think they're still there. They're still a team that can win. Vegas is a little disappointing year, a team that can win and will play Vancouver a bunch of times. You know, the Wild have turned it on a little bit and suddenly have, in the you know, not President's Trophy talk, but they're a good team that can beat other good teams. The Jets are in there. All these good teams, people want to laugh at them all the time, and we'll laugh at them later. But the Coyotes are a decent team this year and can beat a lot of good teams. Mm-hmm. And the Rangers lost to a crappy team last night, the Columbus Blue Jackets. So it's not going to be the Rangers. And, all right. It's going to be the Florida Panthers.
Yes, at now plus 300. But when, like I said, when you brought this up, it was, I think, in the 700-800 range originally. When you put it on social media, it was in that range.
And I got it at plus 900.
Yeah, you got it early and earlier. But that's what you got to do with this kind of stuff, especially futures bets.
Yeah.
Futures bets are some of the best bets you can make as long as you monitor them during the season.
Mm.
They really are. They're so up there. Anyway, though, with that...
I almost put more money in when it was plus 1,000.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, no.
I get you. Anyway, so we'll move on to rapid-fire news real quick. Just a couple of things. Bill Belichick is looking for a TV job, has been reported.
Oh.
Which I think would be great because everyone thinks that he has no personality. He has plenty of personality.
No,
he
we
just
all
shut
saw.
It down. He just shuts it down when he talks to the media because there's no reason to do that. Like, talking to the media doesn't give you any type of advantage. But he's been guest appearances on what do they call them? Like NFL kickoff shows.
Sure.
He was at the Army Navy
game. Yeah, we all saw that.
Like he and if you want someone to explain the game, he's going to be great at it.
Well, so. Remember that they did the NFL 100 thing?
Yes.
Bill Belichick was the guy that they had explaining why is this guy on the list.
Yeah. Like,
well, let me tell you a huge history lesson about this guy his entire life.
Yes. So I would love to see it. I think Amazon maybe would be the move potentially unless they want him on one of those pregame shows. Those pregame shows. I feel like no one really watches them.
No.
The only one people watch is college football kickoff because that's different. First off, there's a ton of games that you get picks for, right, because they pick winners. But then it's like the atmosphere of, you know, the tailgating and all that kind of stuff before. And they usually have a celebrity on, a lot of time a celebrity who went to wherever the big game school is like of that week. So there's other reasons why people do that. There's a reason why people watch those ones. I don't think anyone watches the NFL kickoff show as much.
Fox should get Bill and put Bill and Tom on the broadcast together.
You can't
That'd
do that.
That'd be great.
Because neither one of them could do play-by-play.
I don't care. Let's just have them in the booth, talk football, occasionally mention the game on the field, and just give me football talk.
I got you.
Just so this is quiet for a couple minutes, a big play happens. Remember Super Bowl 51? Oh, my God. And they go over Super Bowl 51.
Also, T. Higgins has been franchise tagged by the Bengals. No shocker there. The real thing is, are they actually going to pay him all that money, or did they franchise tag him just to now trade him? I'm sure they're open for business. I don't know if they're going to get it done, but I'm sure they're at least listening. I think the Texans would make a lot of sense.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess.
You got cap space, young quarterback, get him another big weapon. You go into the draft to draft more defense and offensive line.
Like, I mean, they got Nico Collins. They got Tank Dell.
Tank Dell.
Oh, he did best as whatever.
Yeah, he
was
did.
It, was it Achilles or knee?
I forget, but still, you can't just, you know.
Sure. If it's Achilles, just get that Aaron Rodgers treatment. You'll be back a couple weeks.
Yeah, there's a difference when you're a wide receiver and the quarterback.
He's 40.
Still, he's not running around cutting angles. Anyway, also, college basketball. Rick Pitino had one of the more crazy, brutal callouts of his team I think I've ever heard. Really came across as a jackass. But hey, at the end of the day, he said that afterwards he talked to the team and apologized for the statements. He said it was about He said it was about calling out his guys because he thinks that they can be better and challenging them. And they beat Creighton yesterday right after that. So I don't know. I mean, the team was supposed to be good. He feels like they've blown too many late game second half leads. And he called them out and they beat Creighton. So Creighton's a top ranked team. Just took down number one UConn the game before that. So I don't know, man. Maybe Rick Pitino knows something. We don't like him because he's a jerk. And he's a well-known slime ball, but, you know, maybe he doesn't know what he's doing. I don't know. But
maybe Creighton put all their energy into UConn.
That's true.
Game prior.
I mean, listen, I know a lot of people who are on St.
Mary's.
No, St. John's. There's so many. I might be wrong. There's so many St. whatevers. There's St. Peter's. There's St. Joseph's. There's St.
Bro, there's so many saints.
I know, right? But anyway.
St. Augustine.
I don't think that's a college.
That's though. A saint, though.
It is a saint, but I don't think it's a college. But anyway. And then finally, we'll take us into our next segment. Cody Bellinger. The deal was finally done. He re-signs with Chicago Cubs on a 3-year extension worth $80 million. Now, that's 26.6 a year, so I guess the APY is great. But I'm sure that's not what Boris had in mind specifically. But hey. He ends up back with the Cubs after this long song and dance, and we're going to get into that right now. So you have some thoughts on this?
Well, he's got an option. I think he's got an opt-out after the first year.
Yes, he does.
And then I think the third year is mutual?
Yes.
Okay. So, like, if he, you know, if he balls out,
again,
I'm sure he'll try to go to free agency again and get another deal. Mm-hmm. I don't want this long-term. Mm-hmm. But if not, then he'll just be like, well, I'm going to pick up my option for the second year and make another $26 million. Mm-hmm. And then probably just sign some deal somewhere.
Mm. I mean, yeah. No, I agree. But, I mean, this is a guy who was in the MVP conversation last year. Now, obviously, he's a unique player because the highs and lows are insane. I mean, he literally was benched late in the season by the Dodgers the year before. Like, when he's awful... It's not even like other we talk about streaky baseball players where they're like, he's bad for 2 months, but he'll be good at other times during the season. No. Cody will be terrible for the entire freaking season. Like, he has bottomed out, I think, at least twice, right? I think it's been 2 years at least. He's had two different seasons where he's, like, just completely bottomed out.
Well, he sucks in the playoffs.
Yeah, well,
in general.
We establish it. You're too far away from Mike. Oh, yeah. 100%.
He just sucks in the playoffs.
No.
Year to year.
No, but he's regular season, though. He's had multiple years where he just bottoms out.
Wasn't one of the 2020 season, though? So, like, that's kind of like, who cares?
It's shortened, I guess, but still. But the other one, his last year with the Dodgers was a full year.
I know.
He was so awful that he went from batting cleanup to literally getting benched. Like, barely played in the playoffs. Barely played the last month of the year. Like, but anyway, so... Boris gets this deal done, definitely not the amount of years he wants, and there's a bunch of Boris guys still on the market, JD Martinez, Blake Snell. Do you think this is a wider league baseball thing, or do you think this is just Cody, you're one of the most inconsistent players ever?
Oh, well, I mean, I think everyone was... He wanted long-term. I don't know how long-term is, but, yeah. Like, everyone... I mean, the consensus seemed to have been, bro, do it for a couple of years and then we'll talk long term with you. Mm-hmm. And even then, like last year, like, yeah, he had a comeback year, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean,
but even then people were like, you're not hitting the ball very hard. Mm. Like he was relying a lot on launch angle. Mm-hmm. Like he wasn't squaring up the ball. He wasn't hitting rockets. Mm. If it was a home run, it was like light tower home run. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a screamer. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, you're getting kind of lucky here. And that's going to run out. Because when you're not hitting the ball square and you're not hitting it very hard, you're going to get pop-ups. You're going to get ground balls. And it's like, all right, he got kind of lucky for 162 games last year.
I mean, there are seasons like that, though.
Sure. No, that's – but, like, come on.
No, I know. But last year, I mean, at the end of the day –
you can do that for 8 years?
The stats are good. 499 at-bats, 29 doubles, 26 homers, 97 knocked in, 20 steals, a .307 batting average with a .356 on base.
Well,
now his final 2 years in LA,
what was the strikeout?
He batted 165 in 2021 in 315 at bats, and in 2022 he hit 210 with a .265 on base, 19 homers, 27 doubles.
What was the strikeout rate for the past 2 years?
So in 2021 he struck out 94 times in 315 at bats, which is atrocious. And then the year after that with the Dodgers, 504 at bats, he struck out 150. Last year, he struck out 87 times in 500 at-bats, which okay. is a significant improvement.
Sure. Well, that's the other thing that I was – when I was brought up to me, it's like, oh, they're not – they don't like that he's not hitting the ball hard. And I'm like, all right, I get that. I'd obviously rather have a man square up the ball every time. That's great. But he's putting the ball in play, and that, you know, that can breed –
at a significantly higher rate than he was last
year. Yeah, and that
can
breed – it's like, all right. If I put the ball in play and I don't hit it hard, something good could happen. If I miss the ball, nothing's going to happen.
Yes.
Nothing at all is going to happen. So, like, I don't know.
But do you see this as now? So, last show I talked about how I think this offseason has been sort of the rubber meets the road when, in 2020, the players refused to negotiate their contracts and get paid the same amount of money as if they were playing 162 games, even they were only playing a fraction of that. And a lot of teams literally lost money that year, like literally net negative.
Yeah.
And I said, eventually this is going to come back to bite the players. You're not going to get the same kind of contracts when people have to adjust their books. Like, you know, these companies, they project their books 5 years out at least.
Yeah.
So by year three after 2020, I'm sure there are plenty of teams who are like, we're not near our projections right now. We got to do something. So I kind of felt like, a little bit last year, but then this year I thought was really the year that it seems like the rubber has hit the road and teams are like, listen, we got to find some money here somewhere. We got to save some somewhere. So
I mean,
is that right, you think, or is this more a Cody story? Just individual player.
I think team to team, player to player, it's a little different. Yeah. Blake Snell, yeah, I bet he's like, I want that money I missed out on in the past, and like, I still want to be paid. Like, I'm the star that I think I am, despite the fact that you guys might have lost money and stuff like that. I could see Snell being that guy. I could see teams, like, certainly the Padres now, being like, ugh. So they had to take out a loan, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah, well, but no, listen, the Padres are shedding.
But it's strange, because, like, immediately after, like, you know, the Padres exploded with contracts. The Mets exploded with how much money they're spending. And a couple other teams were the same way. I think the Blue Jays, you know... surprised me with how much they spent. So again, I think it's team to team, player to player with that. And Cody, I mean, Cody could be, but I if I was his agent, I'd be like, dude, you sucked not long ago.
Kind of for two seasons.
Like, you can't be thinking about, like, oh, those dollars I missed in 2020. Like, you need to think about where's going to be good for you that will get you some good stats that'll eventually get you that contract. That's what you should be thinking about, kid. Yeah.
No, I'm sure it's a mix of a little bit of both.
Sure.
Because someone like Snell, coming off his Cy Young performance, he's probably good enough that he will be able to play this out and play hardball and get a big-time deal, long-term, and big money.
And he whines, so.
But someone like Cody with the history, teams are just like, because of what I said about the money stuff in 2020, like, you're just not an it. It's not you're not good enough with a long enough history that I'm going to pay that money right now. I think that's probably, like I said, it's a little bit of both. Snell can get over that obstacle because he's been so good, and he's a pitcher, and he's coming off a Cy Young season. Cody is not that guy.
I still think as a pitcher, Snell should be more like, man, I really want to go to spring training.
Yeah,
I think that'd be great for him.
Yes, probably
as a pitcher, I think he should prioritize it. I get the idea of like. Like, listen, I'm one of the best pitchers in the league, and I proved that last year with a different team because, you know, he struggled in the National League at first. But I think, one, I think a lot of teams are like, you're also very inconsistent. You have huge highs, but your lows are pretty damn bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have an attitude problem. I'm not surprised that, like, teams are not jumping at the chance to give him a huge contract.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. At the end of the day, though, I still think pitching is such, obviously, always so important, and you have a guy coming off a Cy Young season. I still see him, at the end of the day, signing a 5 or 6 year deal, and it's worth, like, $26 million a year.
I do wonder, though, because, like, you know, with these new rules, the trend is heading offense.
Yes.
And at least the Red Sox think so. Who the hell cares about championships? Just make money.
Yes.
Offense is the sexier thing, at least in terms of getting people in seats, making money.
Yeah. Although you say that, and I agree when you're talking about the entire team and day to day, but there is a huge marketable value when you have that stud ace. Like,
sure, he sells jerseys. He sells ticket for a day of the week.
Yeah, I know. But, like, you know, sale day, I bet you if you looked at the numbers, how much more money they made on sale day.
Sure.
So I understand, and overall, you might spend more money on offense than multiple players. But there is a big element to, like, the Blake Snell would be the front of rotation. It's an event. Come to the ballpark and watch him dominate.
Perhaps. I don't disagree with that.
But I agree. The rest of pitching, you don't have to spend as much money on. Because first off, you use multiple pitchers a game now. And when you ask some of them to just come in relief and throw one inning, well, you only need two pitches. So I can just keep rotating up guys from the minors, and they can give me 30 solid innings a year of shutdown baseball. Even though, you know, if I left them out there to throw 70, 80, they probably wouldn't be quite that good. But I only need them for a small fraction of time.
Mm. Well, that's why I think a guy like Snell, like, he's actually built, assuming he's that consistent, to be a playoff, end of the season, make a run pitcher. Because, like, you know, I watched, I mean, I guess it was 2020, so, like, you know, he didn't have the mileage on the arm, but, like, he was a stud in that World Series.
Yeah.
And, like, could go deep in a game in a big situation, got taken out way too early. Mm-hmm. So, like, I, you know, for that, I could definitely see a Snell wanting to build a real rotation, mm-hmm. move that fifth guy to the bullpen mm-hmm. in the playoffs to be the long reliever. But I don't know. It's just, one, there's only so many teams that could talk to a Blake Snell. Like, you know, as much as the Reds need pitching, mm-hmm. like, he's just, that's not their market.
Yeah, I know.
So, and then you got, like, you know, the Red Sox are now a small market team. I don't really think. I'm sure they called him. At least I hope they did.
Yeah.
At least to make a call. But, like, I'm sure they very quickly were like, we're out of that market. Mm-hmm. I think the Yankees at this point have spent most of their money that they planned on spending. Mm-hmm. So they're probably out. Cubs seem to have focused so much on one man. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they are in that. So there's only, again, the Dodgers, would they really be in that at this sweepstakes? I guess you can't rule them out because they're the effing Dodgers, but, like, they spent over $1 billion. Do I think they're going to spend more on Snell? Mm-hmm. There's only so many teams left to even talk to him.
Yeah, I would think that who would be left? Baltimore could be left. I know they're not usually a high spender, but when you're as cheap as most of their roster is, I could see it.
And they also got a new, I mean, they don't have the new owner yet, but they're going to.
I thought the Jays would at least be in talks, and especially since it's Hinchin Ryu's going back to Korea, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
So they're light in the rotation. I think the big one that I expect to make a call, especially since they dropped out of the Cody sweepstakes, is the Phillies.
Mm.
I'm shocked that there hasn't been more buzz about that. And I expect that there will be, especially if this continues like this and he's out there this long, because it means the Yankees aren't biting the bullet and doing it. I expect Philadelphia to make a call here at some point.
Maybe Dombrowski, he's not a Dombrowski guy.
Maybe.
Because Dombrowski loves big names, superstars, spending all that money. But, like, he does seem to at least have his guys.
Yeah, but they haven't done anything that big this offseason, have they? Not that I can think of. Again, most people haven't done anything big this offseason. That's kind of the point of what we're talking about. But as you talked about, when there's only so many teams left anyway, to me right now it's Yankees. Not necessarily in this order, but Yankees, Phillies, Cardinals, Jays. those are the four teams that I think make the most sense, and I could see.
Could the Mets be in it now? Because they just lost what's-his-face?
No, because he is trying to shed money.
I know they said that.
I mean, everything they've done so far has makes me think that they're serious about shedding money.
Mm.
Listen, I'm sure Steve will binge and spend a year or two later, but he's trying to reset things after how much his experiment of throwing money into an incinerator over the past 2.5 seasons has failed.
But that's like an actual DeGrom replacement.
It is, but
as opposed to 40-year-old Justin Verlander.
Yes, but when the rest of the team is as bad as it is right now, it doesn't matter.
Well, then that's an actual Jake DeGrom replacement.
No, they need to.
They will win games 1-0, right, and he will go 9-9 with a sub 2 ERA.
No, they're going to. They're pressing the reset button for sure in New York. I mean, listen, if you think that, but.
I mean, I don't. There's like even Philly. Like, I haven't actually heard Philly being in the mix for that. And then, like, I haven't heard the Cardinals being in the mix.
But I've heard almost nothing on the Snell stuff anyway. I've heard almost zero about actually, who's even talking about. Other than people saying the Yankees.
I've heard him. The most name I've heard him linked to, or the most team I've heard him linked to, is the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, it's like, that's not going to happen.
No, I know. It's mostly been the Yankees and Red Sox, mostly just because they're the two traditional big spenders, and the Dodgers spent their money already on the pitching.
He can't go to the Dodgers either.
He's not going to the Dodgers.
He would look terrible in that uniform. That's what matters.
I can't see him going out there, though. They've invested enough in the pitching.
The Rangers. They need to replace Montgomery. Okay. That's another one that's like, where the hell is he going?
No, I know. I mean, the problem is with Montgomery, right? Snell sets the market. So maybe Jordan's not gone yet because Blake ain't gone yet.
Did you hear where Jordan Montgomery spent his entire summer?
No.
Or excuse me, his entire offseason winter?
No.
Boston.
Did he really?
Yeah, he worked out here. He trained here. His wife worked here.
That's so depressing.
Yeah.
Literally just giving you the biggest green light of all time, and yet we still didn't sign
him. Like, it's like that thing. Where, like, the girl really wants to sleep with you, but you just don't get it. Yeah. You just can't pick up on it.
It's guys when they're, like, 20s, early 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there whole Reddit things about that? Like, all the things guys miss in college?
Yeah. That's what it is.
No, it really is. But that is so depressing. Where would you think Blake's going to go? At the end of the day?
Texas Rangers.
Wow.
No.
They have spent so much money over the last couple of years.
You know who could, like, out of nowhere, because they just got rid of a pitcher that would, I mean, you won't be, not Blake Snell price tag, but they got rid of one that Cy Young caliber. Maybe the Seattle Mariners could swoop in. Because they don't have no money.
Yeah. And they're not spending it on anything merely.
At least not this off season, I don't think.
No.
They had a move. I don't remember what it was.
I mean,
and it wasn't just getting rid of Robbie Ray.
No, I know. Which I don't even remember where he went.
I don't either.
I mean, he's someone who's not that relevant anymore.
No,
he's been injured over the last couple of years.
But they spent money on him, and they're like, well, we'd like to do that again, maybe, on a pitcher. And it's like, sure, Blake Snell will be more expensive, and he should be. But like, come on, I could see that. I'd like that for them.
Yeah.
He'd look good in a Mariners uniform. Not the current ones, because no one looked good in a current baseball uniform. But, oh, that didn't make it in the show.
What?
The Fanatics uniforms.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
There's time. They're not changing anytime soon.
No. But anyway, I'm going to go. He's going to go to Philadelphia. That's my thing. Dombrowski swoops in here late and does it. Because, like I said, I'm not hearing any buzz other than people just speculating. Yankees. But... Cashman,
Florida Marlins
ownership, they don't make that move anymore.
It's going to the Florida Marlins.
They're very hesitant. And they already spent money on soda. Yeah, right.
That'd Washington be... Nationals.
Yeah, right.
Oakland A's.
Do you know what their over-under is for win total? The A's.
51.
All right. That's extreme, but it's in the 50s, yes.
Okay.
It's 55.5.
Oh, I'm extreme with my 51.
Well, listen, when it comes to baseball over-unders, just 3 wins is a big deal.
I guess.
Yeah, it is.
It's a whole series right there.
It is. Anyway, so with that, we're going to take
This was Cody Bellinger. This was a Cody Bellinger segment.
I mean, it was started with the Bellinger one, but it really was about what the market is. We'll talk about Cody and that impact on the Chicago Cubs later
You're right.
in the show anyway. So it's more about the market and everything. Okay. Actually, no, we're not going to do the break yet. We'll quickly pivot back to some football for here for a second. The Jerod Mayo comments. Now, it's small stuff. Most people probably didn't hear it. Definitely a lot of people probably outside of Austin didn't hear it. But it was just, it was addressing the media. It was just one little tidbit of this that really, I don't want to know, struck a nerve, put my tinfoil cap on, made me alert. I don't know what you want to call it. But he talked about, and then he droned on it, was how important the media relationship is for the team and the coaching staff in football, you know? How important it was going to be for Jerod Mayo and his staff and this New England Patriots team now going forward to have a good relationship with the media. And I think that is beyond stupid. I mean, and again, if this was a normal scenario with Jerod Mayo, a normal coach who had a bunch of suitors, then I'd be, okay, this is whatever. He's just talking to talk. And he's just being nice because there's no reason not to be nice. But when he is someone who didn't have other options, when they ran out Bill Belichick, who was the complete opposite, by the way, he didn't give a single you-know-what about the media, and they bring in this guy to then coach, this, to me, has John Tom Sula vibes in San Francisco so much all over it. Jonathan Kraft and the Krafts sat there and picked someone they could control and be a puppet. I'm not saying Mayo's dumb. I don't think Mayo truly believes what he's saying, but he's being told what to say, and Mayo can't say no because it's not like he had any other options. I think he's a puppet, and that never works in the NFL. If your coach doesn't have the power and everyone can eventually know it, he's basically just a puppet for what the meddling ownership wants to do, it never works out. I think this is disaster written all over it. I think it's Jonathan Kraft handprints written all over it. It's just my opinion, but
I'll say one thing. Mm-hmm. First of all, mm-hmm. I wouldn't quite say he had no options because people called, other teams called about him prior. Mm-hmm. So he's not
okay.
Unwanted.
I don't think he had head coaching.
Right? I wouldn't say, probably not. I wouldn't say he's got at least a lot of head coaching options coming into this offseason if he explored them. Mm-hmm. But when you're the, you know, you're tapped to be the heir apparent of one, a legend, and two, to a ownership that is hugely respected and known amongst the NFL, that's when you kind of like, you can't screw over the Krafts. Like, because then you'll look bad to the Jerry Jones and a lot of these other big ownerships. And sure, you'll find a job. Josh McDaniels did after he screwed over the Colts and Irsay. So it's all, you know, it's out there. But you can't just screw over the Krafts and expect not to have some repercussions somewhere in your NFL career and your job hunting. But, I mean, yeah, I think the Krafts are like, we need to be in charge again. Or at least Jonathan thinks that. I think Robert's just like, you know, old and clapping his hands. Like,
yeah.
I love Jerod Mayo. But like, yeah, I when I first, because I didn't see the or hear the quote, I didn't see anything more than just the
the quick soundbite.
I want to have a good relationship with the media or whatever the exact quote was. I don't know. And to be honest, I just kind of shook it off. It's just like, whatever. This team is going to be a joke. It is what it is. But like, I can't. My mind didn't go to, yeah, Jonathan Kraft probably told him to say this or something along those lines of like, you know, putting it in his ear of, we want to have a good relationship with the media. And then he was just like, you know what? Yeah. And then he just regurgitated that to the media. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, it does scream Jonathan Kraft and not Jerod Mayo.
I know.
Because Jerod Mayo is, his nickname was like Belichick Jr. or Bill Jr., something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and that makes me think, one, he is a smart guy with a lot of football knowledge, mm-hmm. so he's not an idiot. And two, it kind of strikes me as he is not a bitch, mm-hmm. not a pushover. Mm-hmm. So, like, why would he care about the media? I assume he respected Bill and how he went about his job, mm-hmm. which probably had to include press conferences. Like, come on. Do I think a football player looks at his pro lane, he's like, you were a little rude in your post-game press conference. Like, you shouldn't do that. Like, no, none of them like that aspect of the job. It's just part of the job.
And no one cares in the building. Nobody cares in the locker room at all. And you know who does know that? Probably better than many. Gerard Mayo should, because Gerard Mayo was on those teams that did nothing but win.
Yeah.
And Bill did nothing but put his finger up at the media.
Yeah.
And was like, just toyed with them. Then told them to shut up and didn't give them a single answer ever.
You know who does care a lot about media opinions and their relationship with media? Owners and ownership groups.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, you see this in football and in ownership when you pick coaches. See it in people's personal relationships. Usually when something, like, at the end of the day, you've been dating a girl and, you know, certain flaws come out and it's a disaster in the end, you usually, like, pick the kind of complete opposite of the next time. You see it in coaching, too. You have a hard-ass coach, you know, big discipline and all that doesn't work out. Then you immediately go to the opposite route, usually. More a player's coach, more friendly, you know, likable, gets along with players better. That's, you know, and, you know, they picked Mayo, who probably isn't the opposite of Bill, but they would like...
For coaching.
Yes, but they would like him to be, and they would like the team to be the opposite of what it was under Bill, especially Jonathan, who we suspected now over the last couple of years has built a very nice, cozy relationship with the media and used them to get what he wanted.
Well...
Now they picked Mayo because he was in the building and he'd be easy to control, and now they need to make him what they want him to be.
Well, I see it as, I mean, a couple of things. One, I think signing Mayo as the head coach, one kind of shouts from the rooftop, says, like, yeah, we think Bill's coaching style was hugely effective. We just don't like the attitude aspects and other things like that, which is why we tapped a guy like Mayo, worked under Bill, probably wants to, although probably has a lot of traits similar to Bill, probably wants to establish himself apart from Bill, his own man, his own style. And being a part of the organization, there's just, you know, there's going to be respect he's going to give towards the crafts, towards the team name and stuff like that, which means he will probably at times, even if he doesn't want to, bend over backwards for them. So that's why I think there's a couple of reasons why they picked Mayo. They have to admit that Bill was a good coach and they want that style to, but they also want a man who is controllable and will respect them in the name of the team because he's not established yet and he came from the team.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, there's just more signs to me that this is Jim Tom Sula vibes. And in San Francisco, we hired someone to be a puppet. So anyway, with that, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll get into the NBA All-Star talk, some more on the fields, and you're going to talk Devers and the Red Sox as well, some more Boston stuff. So stick with us, guys.
Yeah. All right, and we're back. Now from one, I guess, person's comments to another. And from one off-season to another. So the Red Sox, spring training started. Yeah, it's all exciting. And it is an exciting time of year. But one player on the Red Sox seems to be, I mean, I wouldn't say not excited. I bet he is excited to get back in the thick of things. But he's not happy. At least he doesn't seem that way. It's hard to gauge when, you know, when you're in a conversation with someone, you gauge how, like, their tone of voice, the words they use and stuff like that. When it goes to a translator, it's a little harder. So all we have is the words themselves. And Rafi Devers had something to say about the offseason that the Red Sox just had. And I won't read the whole quote, just a couple of tidbits from it. And he started by saying, he's like, I know what we needed last year. They know what we needed. Everyone knows what we needed. And this isn't about what they needed. Because like he said, we all know what he needed or what they needed. But it's about how it's affecting the team now. You know, in the 90s, the Red Sox were, I don't want to say a joke, but nobody cared. Nobody wanted to be here. They weren't competing for championships. And then we got a guy named Nomar Garciaparra. And then we got a guy named Pedro. And suddenly there was buzz. People wanted to play with those guys. People wanted to wear that Red Sox uniform. We got Manny and a lot of these other guys. And suddenly there was about the Red Sox. The Red Sox were cool again. Everyone wanted to watch their games, especially when they played the Yankees. Everyone wanted to think about the Red Sox, talk about the Red Sox, all that stuff. They made a lot of money. They spent a lot of money. They were involved in a lot of things all the time. Any big name on the market, Red Sox had their hand in it. Even if they didn't win the race for it, you felt off seasons were fun, going after players like Johan Santana and Curt Schilling back in the day. Anyway, now we don't have any of that, and the players clearly are getting frustrated by it. I you know, they had the, I can't remember what they call it, the fan fest, whatever the crap they do in Worcester. They have players show up, like Trevor Story was there. They all looked sad this year. And they got asked questions about, like how do you think this team is going to do, whatever. And, you know, with this Rafi Devers quote, it's kind of reached, I guess, the boiling point with the players. Mm-hmm. And with, you know, Rafi Devers securing his $300 million 10-11-year deal.
Yeah, he can say whatever he wants.
He can say whatever he wants. And he did. He went on to also say they need to make an adjustment to help us players to be in a better position to win. Everybody in this organization wants to win. I don't know about that one. And we as players want to win, and I think they need to make an adjustment to help us win. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with that, Rafi. But, like, you know, when he makes comments like this, it screams to me, nobody wants to be a Red Sox anymore. Mm-hmm. And why the hell would they? You have a player like Rafi Devers, and a player like that caliber, usually people are like, I kind of want to play with that guy. But you're not going to get paid here, and you're not going to play with other stars. He's the one guy left, kind of, that's a star. They let all the others walk or traded them away. Mm-hmm. And they're all cutting. I don't know who the player was, but they told that player, like, if we want to really sign you, we need to cut more salary.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the Red Sox I know. Mm-hmm. That's not the Red Sox that would bring in all these studs. To have, you know, you got the we have the player to build around now, Rafi Devers, but they won't do it. Mm-hmm. We had Nomar, they wanted to build around him. They had Pedro Martinez, they wanted to back him up with another ace in the rotation to protect him. We had Manny Ramirez, like, that's not good enough. We need to protect him in the lineup with another huge home run hitter. Those days are done. Mm-hmm. Those days are gone, for at least for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. And Rafi Devers seems to know it, and it's like, why? Other than the money, mm-hmm. why would he want to be here? They got rid of his best friend, mm-hmm. and it spit in his face in the process. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Rafi Devers has a sour taste in his mouth after witnessing that, even after he got his money. Why would he want to stay here, and why would anyone want to come here?
There's no real reason.
There's nothing to entice them.
No, other than maybe the history of playing at Fenway and the fact that you will be around an avid fan base. But it's a fan base that won't be as avid anyway eventually because they're getting sick of this.
Yeah. And it's like, all right, you can play, you can wear a historical uniform and whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. But what if you're going to lose, if you're going to be a sub 500 every year, that's going to lose its muster pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, from the player standpoint, like Devers talked about, you know, what we need. I think it really probably came crashing down and became very obvious to the players around them last year when they were staying afloat despite the pitching injuries. They were scoring enough runs. They were back in the race around the trade deadline, and they didn't do anything to add.
Yeah.
At all. Which at the end of the day, I mean, like we talked about, we debated should you add, should you not. I was pure, like, you add. Like, this team is playing very well, despite the fact all the injuries on pitching. Like, all you need is a few better arms, and you could be in the playoffs. But they just refuse to do it. And to the players, that just screams, first off, during the season, what it screams is, we don't believe in you. Mm. Which is not great for morale or anything.
Sure.
But they really were, like, battling hard in July.
Yeah.
To stay alive, and they were able to do it. Despite being as handicapped as they were. And it probably just felt like as one leg was getting chopped out from under them, the ownership just came in and said, oh, we're going to chop the other one off too.
Hmm. Actually, playing up that, you know, just to make no decision at the deadline, I think was worse than even if they sold. Because, mm-hmm. You know, you could, at that point, you could tell the players, like, listen, we're punting this year. Mm-hmm. Even if we can make the playoffs, we don't really think we have a chance to win the World Series. We're going to punt because we want to make room for, let's get Jaron Duran at bats every day because we like where he's coming from. We like what we think he can do in the future. We want to get Casas at bats every day. We want to get Wong in the lineup every day. Mm-hmm. If you said that we're going to sell because we want to get these kids in the lineup every day because we think they can really make that jump for this year and next year,
and also,
and then we'll compete next year.
Oh, well, yeah, you would have sold them on, like, okay, We don't think we're quite there yet. We've had these injuries too. Like, we know, we appreciate the effort you're doing in to keep us alive. Most of you guys are going to be here next year. Rafi, you know, we'll talk after the season. But we want to save money. We want to just punt on this season because the kids will be back and play next year. We'll save up money. We'll sign you, Rafi, and we'll go get some pitching help in the offseason. That would have been acceptable.
Yeah.
But then to do nothing at all. You don't sell. You don't buy. You do nothing. You communicate nothing. No one of the players are annoyed. And no wonder Rafi's going to call you out for it.
Yeah. And they, especially after Zandy left, people talked about, like, who is going to be that guy in the locker room? Well, it's going to be Rafi Devers. He's the star. He's going to, at that point, he was one of the longest tenured players now, despite his young age. And he got the big money, which means he's going to be looked at to be the face of the locker room, the voice in the locker room. Well, this is him speaking up. This is him voicing, taking charge, and voicing
and
his opinion.
Communicating
what
the mood of the locker room is to ownership.
Yeah. He's doing it. Our boy's growing up. Exactly how they wanted, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it is, that is funny.
Thank you, Rafi.
Yeah, thank you.
So much.
Thank you, Rafi, for actually communicating what the mood of the players in the locker room is and for confirming to the fan base, you know, everything we've already believed.
Because I've kind of, you know, fans can be upset. And, you know, a lot of times they have a good reason to. I think Oakland fans have a good reason to be upset. I think Reds fans a couple years ago had a good reason to be upset. Not last year, though. But I've learned that it doesn't matter if the fans are upset. Ownership could not care less if the fans are upset. Couldn't give less of a damn if the fans are upset. But if the players are upset, maybe that'll change something.
Maybe. You know, in some places it matters if the fans are upset. But when Fenway is what it is, you know, it doesn't matter what the Sox fans think. They'll make money either way.
Yeah.
But anyway, so moving on from that one, let's talk about somebody else who's talked a bit. But I actually want to give Justin credit. But first we're going to talk about the other thing that I talked about, which is, listen, I've mentioned this multiple times. I mentioned it on the show last week as well, and I'll go back into it. I think the fact that this is even a debate, which I kind of think for him to unfollow the Bears and unfollow the other Bears players and everything on his social media, I think probably tells you that it's no longer a debate. And the fact that Caleb Williams doesn't have an agent, I think knows that he's going to Chicago. He knows that they're going to draft him. So I don't think it's really a debate anymore. The fact that Bears fans still want to talk about this is why I talk about this. Justin Fields is not good enough. Like, I don't think he's a horrible player. I think he could be a low-end starter somewhere else. But in his third year, I need more of a jump than what he did. He threw 16 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. He had 4 rushing touchdowns, and he had 10 fumbles. That's basically a 1-to-1 TD to turnover ratio. In his third year, his completion percentage went from like 60.4 to like 61.5. In his third year, adding DJ Moore to, they have enough weapons. They've improved the O-line. It's middle of the pack. He's had enough things that there's no reason to think that if he was good enough, that he shouldn't have had a nice big jump by year three, which is about the time that these quarterbacks make that jump, especially nowadays where they come in with way more experience and way more snaps. He's just not good enough when you have the number one overall pick and a prospect as good as Caleb Williams. So, and as I said last week, it's like that friend that you know or person that you know, but that by their mid to late 20s, like, you know, you gave him a pass for a while, you know, the home life wasn't great, the parents weren't great, but it's like once you reach your like late 20s, especially your early 30s, it's like, it's on you to figure it out here at this point. You've been given enough leeway. Eventually, you got to figure it out. It's like that by about year three, I think, with NFL quarterbacks. So, especially if you're like a first-round pick like that. They gave him enough on the offense. They gave him enough on the O-line that it's at least workable. He should have had a bigger jump than that, and you got to move on. However, I will give him this. I thought that the interview he did when he addressed the unfollowing the Bears and the players and stuff, I actually thought was one of the most mature things I've ever heard, the way at least he put it, which he said, listen, I don't have control of this situation. I'm sick of having to hear about it all the time if I'm leaving or staying, and I'm going on vacation. So I just wanted to unfollow everything because I just didn't want to see it on my timelines. I actually think that that's extremely mature. Because, I mean, sometimes I think the unfollowing teams and your players and stuff is really petty.
Yeah.
And stupid.
Yeah.
And there are scenarios, like, there have been so many that I was like, that's dumb. This one, I get it. This is the second year that this conversation has come up. Like you said, he has no control over the situation. And he just, you know, social media can be extremely toxic. And then throw in the scenario that he's in where you're hearing speculation on your actual job all the time. Like, I get just being like, he didn't put it like, I want to leave. He just said, I don't want to have to constantly see it still.
Yeah.
And again, when you have no control over the situation, I completely understand that.
Yeah. And you know what? The media, I feel like, is not reporting that part of the comment. Because you see the, like, you know, the silly way he put it. Because, like, the girl comment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, you could be, like, messing with the girl, but you don't follow her on Instagram. Oh, but yeah, you're still messing with her and stuff like that. And it's like, I saw that comment. It's like, all right, I get what you're saying there.
That's funny.
And that's funny. But, like, that's not a good explanation. But then you see, you actually read into it, and the whole, like, A, I'm tired of hearing of it. I just don't want to see it on my timeline constantly. Which, like, okay, that's a better explanation. You can just mute them, you know. You can just make it so you're not on the timeline. Whatever, Justin. That's all. You have to hit a bunch of buttons to find that button, I guess.
But I think even if you follow, even if you mute the players, right, or you mute the organization, first off, he'd have to mute everyone.
He also has to unfollow all of them.
But if you mute them, I still think that you can get things that are related to some of the things that you follow.
Maybe.
Like,
I don't know how it'll work on Instagram.
I'm pretty sure it does.
Like, if you mute someone, you won't see their retweets or anything like that. If they get tweeted at, you still won't see it.
Okay.
Instagram, I don't know how it works.
All I know is when I pick up and look at Instagram now, I feel like half the things I look at initially on my feed are not things I'm following.
Yes.
But
yeah,
they have something to do with plenty of other things that I follow.
Sure.
So I kind of think that you have to just unfollow
maybe
to stop getting anything related.
To change the algorithm?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. All right. Perhaps. Maybe he did try muting and then, I don't know. But he also did say, like, people make too big a deal about what's going on social media. It's like facts.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and I think that's a very mature way to do this, in my opinion. Especially, like I said, when you have no control over the situation.
I'm not going to call
it. Which he has none now.
I'm not going to call it immature, but maybe you could have, put it out there. So people weren't like, he unfollowed everybody. And it's like, whoa, let me explain. Maybe he's thinking no one's going to care. Yeah. Everyone's going to get it.
But eventually, like, he explained, and he even said, he didn't say, I want to leave. He even said, I'd come back and play for the Bears. Like, I want to come back and play for the Bears, but I don't have control over this situation, and I'm sick of having to hear about it.
Yeah.
So.
I bet I'd be too.
Yeah. What are your opinions on what I think? I think this is a very clear decision.
I always think you're wrong.
That's
not true.
I think this is a very clear decision. 3 years of playing, 16 touchdowns, 9 picks.
Yeah, that's wrong.
The completion percentage barely went up. The TD to interception ratio is 1-1. Now, if they had the 8th pick or the 7th pick and they were getting the 3rd or 4th quarterback, I think this is a conversation where you just go run it back with him. But when you have the number one overall pick, and by the way, you have another top 10 pick, so you can go get another. Mm. And there's 4 or 5 first round wide receivers in this draft too. I just think it's a no brainer. Caleb Williams is a very high level prospect. He's the closest thing to Mahomes as a prospect coming out of college. Elite arm talent, elite athleticism, far better pocket passer than what Justin was out of college. Like, he's just a better prospect. And Justin, year 3, like, that's usually the leap that guys take. Jalen Hurts, year 3. You know, like, guys get a bigger leap by year 3 usually if they're going to be a high-end starter in this league.
That's where I disagree,
okay.
the whole year 3 thing.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, I get, you know, they could take the leap year 3 to be like, oh, wow, look at him go there. Look at him go now. He's really reaching that potential. I just think to call them a bust after 3 years with quarterbacks, I think is a little unfair, especially after watching Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield.
I don't know if I'm quite calling him a bust. I said he can start somewhere and be successful. He'll be a low-end starter.
But I also do understand when you have the first overall pick and there's a supposed stud, like, you know, generational stud coming out. I understand, like, well, like, come on, we got to pick him.
It resets the money clock. Like, Justin's going to have to get paid soon after his next year.
There's the attitude stuff and the maturity stuff. That's
Caleb,
But that's talent-wise, sure, I guess. Like, you know, even if Justin Fields wasn't a bust, if to call him that, like, you know, when you just have, like, well, we have the first overall pick, and there is just this absolute stud. Like, sorry, guy. But, like, you know, I just think, giving quarterbacks more time than 3 years to be something in this league, I think, is something that needs to be talked about more. Because, like, they're just so impatient with these kids.
And they are.
I think it's not fair. And, like, if they were a little more patient, I think some of these would work out. Like, if the Jets did not toss quarterbacks away after just 2 years every single time, would one of them work out? Yeah, maybe. Was it going to be Darnold? Probably not. Is it going to be Wilson? Probably not. But, like, you know, when you do this, like, with Sanchez and Geno Smith and time after time after time, why do you expect any of them to develop?
No, I know. I said this on the show last week, and that's why I brought up the analogy of, like, you know, the guy in his late 20s, it's time to figure it out. I'm not going to say that he's been given everything, because I don't, obviously. I've made fun of the Bears year two, going into year two, calling them the dumbest organization in sports when they hired the defensive coach when they had a second-year quarterback who looked overwhelmed the first year. It's like, you're dumb. Chicago does dumb things. I'm not disagreeing with that. They haven't given Fields everything. I think Fields would be a significantly better player had he gone to a better operation. But I still think at this point, year three, he's been given a lot more to work with, and the only jump I see is he went from 2-1 with more turnovers than touchdowns to 1-1 when we got him a number one receiver, when we vastly improved the offensive line. And now, by the way, he's had two back-to-back years where he's missed games because of injuries too. That's the other part of it. So there's the injury part too, and then the other part is just money. Like, the rookie contract's running out soon. You're going to have to pay him something, and quarterback inflation, as we've seen, is just a killer.
But wouldn't Justin Fields help some of that inflation?
Why?
Being like, we're not giving you $30 million. Like, get out of town.
Yeah, but you can pay Caleb way less because he just was drafted.
But
he'll get paid more than Caleb.
Well, what I'm paying your starting QB, not $30 to $40 million, fixes the inflation.
Yeah, but do you think...
Getting a rookie does not fix the inflation in any way.
No, it doesn't, but it gives you 5 years of cheap quarterback play. Well, 4 years of cheap quarterback play.
And then you have to pay him an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah, and you
later.
Cross that road when you get there, if he plays to that level, which he can. But 4 years of cheap quarterback play gives me so much cap space to do whatever I want. Look at the Niners.
Is it going to be cheap? He's going to be first overall pick money.
Yeah, but
which is not
that's all just
huge.
Signing bonus that they just give you right away. It doesn't count against the cap.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But the fifth-year option is how much?
Fifth-year option, it has to do with whatever the going rate for whatever tier quarterback. I forget how they do it. But it's kind of like the franchise tag. It's like by what your position gets paid by the league, which
it's a lot of money. It's on draft position?
No, I don't think so. I think it's by league.
Because I thought the first contract's about draft position.
No, first contract. I thought you said fifth-year option, though.
Well, is the fifth-year option not also...
I don't think fifth-year option is tied to your draft slot. Fifth-year option, I believe, is tied to the going rate at your position. Mm. Like, yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Why? If it was...
Why is your first contract not
Why would your fifth-year option... Yeah, but if I'm going to pick up a fifth-year option, we're basically saying that you are a starter in this league. So if you were drafted in the sixth, seventh... round.
I mean, I'm not saying that money shouldn't go up, but
you're clearly way better than your draft spot. I'm almost positive it has nothing to do with your draft spot, the fifth year option. I'm pretty sure it's by the range that your position gets paid.
I think that's gross.
Similar to the franchise tag.
That's gross.
Now, it's not as high as the franchise tag because the franchise tag is what? Like high end of your position.
Yeah.
I think fifth year option is more like mid tier. But as I said, we've talked about this so many times. When Daniel Jones is getting paid $40 million, like, you're handcuffing me when I'm talking to my other quarterbacks. Like, Justin, I'm sorry. I do think you're better than Daniel Jones, but he's getting paid $40 million. Like, what do you want from me?
But you think
one-to-one touchdown interception ratio.
But you think eventually paying Caleb Williams $55 million is going to win you anything?
Yeah.
Especially since his first couple years are going to be with a shitty team anyway.
I mean,
he's not going to win anything there anyway.
I actually kind of think that they have pieces here that they can be interesting. The division is, I don't know, we'll see. Division could be good, but I mean, they'll keep DJ Moore. As I've said, they're middle of the pack on the offensive line. They'll draft a wide receiver probably in this draft as well, whether it be Adunze, Malik Nabers, or Brian Thomas. So you'll add a second weapon to that. The defense improved when they got Montez Sweat.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're that bad. And, you know, life's not
not bad isn't good.
Life's not fair. Caleb is walking into a significantly better situation than what Justin had to walk into.
What if he doesn't sign?
Oh, he's going to sign.
They're trying so hard to make sure he does not go to Chicago.
I think that's kind of stopped. The fact that he doesn't have an agent tells me now that there's nothing more to talk about. Because if he was trying to do that, then he'd have an agent to go behind closed doors and do that stuff. He's signing with the Bears. It's over.
It's over.
And I think part of the
your career is over.
No, not that. I just mean this conversation is over.
No, okay.
They played well enough at the end of last year. They added the person on defense. They have the top pick to go get a wide receiver. Like, it's not as terrible as it looked a year ago at the start of the season, I don't think.
I still
think it's a dumb operation. but again, you know, if it is that dumb of an operation, I think it makes you sort of double down on what I said, which is Justin can be successful somewhere, but he's not good enough, he's not talented enough that he could be successful through how much dysfunction Chicago is going to give him. Caleb is talented enough that he could probably succeed through dysfunction.
But is he mature enough?
That's the problem. But you cross that bridge when you get there. At the end of the day, when we're looking at the football player in the film, and I have 3 years of film on Justin, and it screams to me, low-end starter, throw in, and obviously they don't think of this because they don't think of themselves as dysfunctional, even though they should. He's not talented enough to overcome the dysfunction he's going to face. Caleb is.
Hey.
Purely on the football field, he
is. Yeah, you are. Okay. No, yeah, I understood.
Where do you think would make sense for Justin? Falcons are the top of my list.
You know, if the Broncos really do move on from Russ,
that would be a good one.
I could see that working, especially for a short term.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I don't know if they'll be able to. Although they seem to not care about cap and money. Mm-hmm. If you bring in Justin Fields to back up Stafford for a year, maybe two, because I don't know how long Stafford wants to play, but it can't be that much longer. Mm-hmm. Learn under Stafford and McVay, and maybe he makes something of himself then.
Mm-hmm. You could do that. I think Justin is going to want to go to a place, though, that he's going to start at.
Hmm.
I mean, I guess he has no control over this, though, because
it's, yeah.
But the Rams,
if they just cut him.
But the Rams don't have the ability, I think, to just give away picks because they're too old at too many spots on the roster, and they need the picks.
Maybe they felt really good about that draft last year.
I mean, listen, they should, and I think the Rams are a huge contender next year. I think they're going to be really good. But at the end of the day, like, one good draft does not make up for the fact that they had how many years without like a first round pick. Not that you're going to have to give up a first-round pick to get Fields. You'll probably have to give up, like, a second-round pick, but still. I think Atlanta makes sense. I think Denver makes a ton of sense.
The Patriots.
Well, the other one would be the Steelers.
We'll just collect our 2021 draft QBs. Was it 2021?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the other one that would make a ton of sense would be the Steelers.
I heard they're not looking at anybody.
I have heard that too.
I heard it's a Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph competition.
I know.
That's it.
I've heard that too.
So, okay.
Maybe. But you never know. I mean, as we've talked about, you know, despite the fact what Kraft and Mayo might think, I don't think most people think that your relationship and being honest and truthful with the media is so paramount to your football operation. So let's not just maybe hang our hat that the Steelers are telling the truth.
I guess. I guess that's kind of.
That's kind of it. I think Atlanta, Denver,
And Raiders. Because I have no idea what their quarterback situation is going to be.
Yeah,
but I kind of think they'll draft.
I don't know where they're drafting. How bad are they?
I think they're top 10. Maybe outside.
You're right. Yeah, I could see them. I could see them drafting a quarterback and staying with Aiden O'Connell for a little while if they don't think the quarterback's ready to play.
Mm.
Which, by the way, I think is probably the smarter move.
NFL draft position.
I'll throw the Raiders in, but I do think the main ones are definitely Falcons, Steelers, Broncos. And I think the Falcons make the most sense of all of them. Because the Falcons won enough game that you probably can't go back to the board and draft another quarterback. There's some offensive pieces there in a very bad division that you think that maybe you can be successful. And you bring in someone like Justin, who's at least a playmaker, and maybe he gets you a few more wins.
Oh, the 13th
pick. While you kick the can down the road and decide what you're going to do with that position later.
Raiders are 13th pick.
13th?
Yeah.
It's not great.
Yeah, they won too many games at the end of the year there.
Yeah. But I think...
Giants? I mean, you'll still be stuck with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, no.
But.
It doesn't make any sense. They're stuck with Daniel either way. I mean, and they have a high pick. I mean, listen,
six.
If they decide to go quarterback, they might. Now, when we did quarterback or not to quarterback, I said they shouldn't, but.
Titans.
Okay.
And I still think they should draft a QB.
Okay.
Get in so they'll have.
No, I didn't even think of that one, but that actually makes a ton of sense.
Will Levis, Justin Fields,
although
Malik Willis,
at the end of
another
the day,
quarterback.
I think they'd rather just give Levis a second year if they're not drafting a quarterback.
No. Bring in like six more quarterbacks.
Oh my god!
So many quarterbacks. You know, re-sign Ryan Tannehill.
Definitely don't do that. All right. From that, let's pivot to the NBA All-Star Game. Which, by the way, if we didn't have what we have for the Darwin, I was probably going to give this to either the NBA or the Commissioner Adam Silver. I just love how much it just shows how little the players respect him, because he had this whole talk with the media. He said that he talked to the players before the game. And he was like, this is a big event for the league. It matters to us. Like, we need you to show more effort. You know, we need you to actually try. And the players listened to that, and they went out, and what was it? Almost like 200 points?
Yeah, I saw that. I don't remember what it was, but it was absurd.
Like, an absurd amount of points were scored because clearly nobody was trying.
Yeah.
At all. No one gave a single you-know-what. That no one played defense. People weren't even getting back. I saw some of the highlights. It was embarrassing. And this just shows, it's a microcosm of why the league is at where it is. Because you have this owner who's done nothing but kiss the player's ass and try to look good to the media, try to be pro player. And it just shows you what happens when, what was the quote that the NFL owner got in trouble for? You're letting the inmates run the asylum.
Oh, yeah, the Texans.
Yes. Well, you know what? That's what the NBA is doing. It's been doing that for years, and I just think it's hilarious that Adam Silver literally was like, I talked to them before the game. I talked to them in the locker room. Yeah. I tried to explain to them what this means to the league, and the players were just like,
I talked to them.
Yeah. Like, we don't give a single.
I mean, it's more than just the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because all these All-Star fests, they have to have these festivities and the competitions.
I actually think that the skills competition for the NBA was actually kind of fun to watch. I watched.
You're the only one.
The three-point. I think people watch the three-point shoot.
Bro, I didn't even hear about it this year.
Really?
Yeah. The only thing I heard about the skills competition this year was everyone shitting on the dunk contest, being like, why do we even still do this?
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see the dunk contest. I just saw the
good for you.
I just saw the three-point shooting contest.
People were just making fun of the dunk contest because Jaylen Brown said, he's like, I'm going to rejuvenate the dunk contest. And then it was like the worst one ever, apparently.
Oh, right.
Didn't watch a second of it. That's what I heard. Okay. That's what the online was telling me. So it's like, and you know what? Everyone was saying it. After MLB All-Star Festivities is king.
Yeah.
People actually care about the Home Run Derby. People actually care about the game.
Yeah, but at least the NFL realized it and waved the white flag on this. And they were just like, no one cares. Look, we're turning to flag football. We're not going to put much money into this.
But they're trying to save it by doing that.
They're not trying to save it.
Yeah, they are.
No, they are.
Yes,
not.
They are.
No,
they gave the Manning so much money and said, please get people to watch this. And they tried.
I mean,
the skills competition is kind of funny. I'm never going to sit down and watch it, but sure, I like the little clips on social media.
They still run an event, and they're still going to do things for the television stuff, because like the television people are going to demand that they do something. But I think that they were smart enough to wave the white flag and like make it flag football. No one's going to try.
Yes, but they are.
But they were not invested into the point like Roger Goodell going into the locker room and telling those players.
All right,
like,
well, no, because they know
we
that.
We need you to play hard for
us. Because no one in their right mind would think that's how you're going to get these players.
Exactly, but doesn't
the
that
league
prove,
needs
but
money?
But doesn't that prove the point that I'm making on the NBA?
That they're stupid. They don't get
owners.
They don't get humans.
And the person who runs the league is probably the worst commissioner in any sport in my lifetime.
Yeah, he looks like a skeleton.
He's an idiot. He's an absolute idiot.
He looks like a ghost.
Oh, it's so good.
It just proves that like MLB's king with their All-Star festivities.
Oh, yeah.
That's what matters. MLB's still the pastime, still the classiest.
Yeah. The only things I saw of the NBA All-Star game were people posting videos from it, making fun of it.
Yeah.
It would be like, I think at one point there was one guy down the floor all by himself while the other team on defense just sat on the other end of the court and just watched him like dunk one in. Just like, yeah, we're not going to even try and get back.
Actually, you know what was?
It was a joke. Jogging all over the place.
The actual real highlight of the NBA All-Star weekend was Puka Nacua throwing down some hard dunks in the celebrity game. That was the highlight.
I got to watch that.
By the way, still pairs in comparison to the celebrity softball game.
Oh, that's
that people
the
watch. They actually watch that.
I do too.
I want to. I mean, I usually won't watch the whole thing, but I want to see who's involved.
Yeah. I'll watch the first couple of innings.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love the celebrity softball game.
See if I can see Snoop hit a home run or something.
Yeah. All right. With that final topic, we're going to take a break and then fair and foul. But quickly, Jesse, back to on some hockey. Let's.
Oh, wait. I don't need to record this.
Yeah. Let's touch on the Bruins.
But I want my statties.
Yes.
So the Bruins. Mm-hmm. In a bad place right now.
Yes.
And I'm not that sad about it because I'm rooting for the Panthers.
Okay.
But I want them in the playoffs because they're still the Bruins, and I still think there's still delusion that you're in the playoffs, you can win a cup. So I want that delusion. Anyway, it's just not going well. Ever since the All-Star break, you know, you come out of All-Star breaks, you're either worse or you're better than you were before. There's no I'm just the same I was going into the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. It disrupts too much. You can't be the same person. Same team. And the Bruins are they're tripping over themselves. Yeah, it's been all year where, I mean, it's just been, you see it, you know, the other team pulls the goalie, the defense folds, they can't hold, they go to overtime. And whatever happens, what happens after that. It's not the fact that they're bad in overtime in the shootout. Like, they can win in overtime in the shootout. It's just, like, most of the time, you shouldn't be in overtime. I can't think of a single time this year that they have forced overtime. It's always forced on them. That's bad. That's not good. Especially because, one, you're going to tire yourself out. And two, like, come playoffs. Now, again, I'm not worried about losing in overtime and losing in the shootout. Because, one, there's no shootout in the playoffs. Irrelevant. And two, you don't play 3-on-3 overtime. You'll play the traditional 5-on-5. And again, you're good at the traditional 5-on-5. The problem is if you're constantly going to overtime and you're constantly blowing one-game leads, you're going to constantly get tired. And then come playoff times where you can go to double, triple overtime, 5-on-5, playing real hard hockey the whole time, like you're gonna have so many injuries and get so tired after the first two rounds, assuming you make it that far. It's just not sustainable. It's just not a sustainable thing. And as much as I like the idea that, like, Bruins are really playing up the idea of, like, yeah, we're going to go the dual goalies in the playoffs, which you should have done last year. Omark Swayman. Sure, you can ride that idea to the end. But it doesn't matter who's in goaltending. The defense is always faltering once they pull the goalie. And, again, that's not going to change in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They're not going to – I mean, I guess you could flick a switch in your mind and be like, we're going to play harder. And teams do in the playoffs. But generally, still the same problems will arise again and again. And when you time after every single time, like you can just, it's obvious now at this point. They pull the goalie, you're going to give up a goal. You better hope you have a 2-goal lead late because you're going to give up one. And this isn't, again, not sustainable. You can win in the playoffs. You can win all these overtime games. That'll look great. You're like, oh, we're in the overtime again. I like our chances. We win in overtime. Eventually, let's assume you're right. Panthers did that all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They won every single overtime game they were in, and they were in a lot of them. Then you get to the finals. Everyone is hurt. Ekblad's got a broken foot. Tkachuk's ribs are all caved in. No one's as fast as they were. No one can play anymore. Everyone's got no energy anymore. And now you can't even get it to overtime. That's how it's going to go.
Okay.
And that's what the Bruins are in, the position they're in. They can't close out a single game. It's going to constantly go to overtime. Even if you win those overtime games, eventually it's going to bite you in the ass. You're just going to – the injuries, the stamina, you can't – it's not a maintainable system.
Okay.
Never mind the fact that blowing games late is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're just going to run out of gas.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you can win every single one of these overtime games, these shootouts – and again, do the same thing in the playoffs. Eventually, you will simply run out of gas.
Yeah. Well, that's a completely fair point. All right, with that, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll finish up with Fair and Foul. And our Darwin is always strict with us, guys. And we are back here at Slow Your Roll, finishing it up quickly. Our debate time, you know? We're not one of those shows that just do debate stuff. No one cares about those anymore. No one watches them.
Yeah.
But we do. You know, we have our debate segment sometimes, usually in the off season of a lot of the other years. You know, baseball season hasn't quite started yet. Football season is over. But fair and foul, a couple of statements will decide if it's fair or foul. First one, with Cody Bellinger signing with the Chicago Cubs, the Cubs should be the favorite in the NL Central. Fair or foul, Jesse? I'll start with you.
I say fair. Because, I mean, you look at the Central last year. It was a weird situation throughout. Yeah. I mean, you got the Pirates. Obviously favorites, actually. Not really.
No, I know.
But
you're being funny.
Then the other ones, the Cardinals, I mean, I guess you could say, like, oh, they didn't play that well last year. They should have been better. And it's like, okay.
They are the betting favorite.
I don't care. I'm not falling for that again. Not happening. Arenado and Goldschmidt are another year older. They haven't made any additions that'll make me think, wow, they're back in it. They're back going to be competing. I don't see the Cardinals as going to be. I think they're going to be the same as last year.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Brewers, realistically, I think should be the biggest competition for the Central, as in they're the team that's been winning it recently, and they got rid of Corbin Burns. So like, what the hell are they anymore? They, I got the way they get Alec Bohm or something.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing. They got another bat somewhere in there. It's like, yeah, good for them. The best thing you were is pitching, mm-hmm. and you lost some of that. Do I think the Cubs are going to be all that great? No, but the Central Division's kind of suck, mm-hmm. and I think the Cubs were good last year. They lost Stroman. If Steele is going to be even, two-thirds of what he was last year, I think they'll be okay. Especially since Stroman wasn't there down the stretch, I think they'll be good and they'll take that subpar division.
Wow, I mean, listen, I'm not saying they can't win the division, but to call them the favorite just because they re-signed and added Cody Bellinger back to the roster.
Also, the Reds exist
that had him last year. No, I don't think the Cubs should be the favorite. I don't think anyone should really truly be the favorite. I would give about two or three teams almost the exact same odds. So I don't think they should be the betting favorite. You basically just added someone that you had last year who for the last two seasons was awful and then out of nowhere hit .307 with 29 bombs. Let's see if he does that again. Your offense fell off at the end of last year. Again, you haven't added to it other than just re-signing Cody. I don't think they should be the betting favorite for that. I think the Cardinals are right-ish to be in that favorite scenario.
Why?
Just because they have more of a proven track record with a lot of players. And I think the Reds, I have put down $100 already on them to win the division at plus
really?
350, 375. I think the division is bad. They have Frankie Montas. Let's see if he can make a rebound. They got a bunch of kids, right? They played very high, and they had some lows because it's a lot of kids. They got more young kids coming up. The Cubs don't score enough runs and haven't added enough. The Cardinals are on the older side. I don't think there should be even a real clear favorite in this division, and I definitely don't think it should be the Cubs simply just because they added Bellinger back to the team that they had last year anyway.
No one else added in this division. Frankie Montas doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay.
The Reds desperately needed more pitching than Frankie Montas.
Yeah.
That's good. It's not – I mean, that's –
The Reds, but like, the Reds add because their young stars are another year older and more experienced.
And they're all going to be sophomores.
No.
Sophomore slump is the thing.
No, Cincinnati Reds to win the division. Okay. But if I was making odds, I'd probably put Cardinals, Brewers.
Oh, God. Cardinals.
As the same odds.
No.
The Cubs, slightly less odds, and the Reds, slightly less odds than the Cubs.
I don't know how you can sit there and say the Cubs are a proven track record when last year they were garbage and they're older now.
Who, the Cardinals?
Yeah. Tommy Edman is like, I don't care. He's young. He's too inconsistent. I think, yeah, he has some decent highs, but like very inconsistent last year.
Okay.
Contreras came on at the end of last year, but I don't like anyone.
That's my point. Why I said, I literally just told you as an odds maker, I would put Cardinals and Brewers at almost the same odds. Cubs, very short odds after them, like not much difference. And the Reds, not much odds after the Cubs. And I literally just told you, I just gave the Reds the fourth best odds, and yet that's the team I put $100 on because that's the more value proposition. I don't think this division has any clear favorite, but I certainly don't think it should be the Cubs simply just because they kept Cody Bellinger. All right.
I mean, everyone else lost other than the Reds, and I just don't believe in the Reds.
Okay.
It's not last year. I don't believe in the Reds.
Okay, that's fine.
I believed in them last year.
Okay. Anyway, the next one, relevant, because he's up for a contract extension, I believe, either this year or next, but likely we'll probably have to do it this year. Is Dak Prescott the best quarterback in his division? Jesse, fair or foul?
I mean, fair. I feel like this one is like, it's kind of silly to say Dak Prescott is the best QB in his division. Mm-hmm. But if you simply list them, it's like, I mean, definitely, yeah, come on. Daniel Jones, no. Commanders don't have anybody. Mm-hmm. And Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right.
Well, most people will tell you Jalen Hurts is better.
Last year, you had a case. Mm-hmm. This year, you don't.
I know, I agree.
Dak Prescott can throw the ball more than 20 yards. Not very accurately, but he can. And I think that's better. So, like, what else do I need my quarterback to do? All right, Jalen Hurts can run really fast and keep a play alive. Mm-hmm. That's great. Not really what I'm looking at for a QB, mm-hmm. the thrower of the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's completely fair. If we did this coming into the last year, then you would have been insane. But at this point, Jalen Hurts, who, again, was not a high prospect, people always thought there were problems with him throwing. He's only had one great year. And then immediately once Shane Steichen leaves, regresses, despite the fact that there's plenty of things to work with on that offense. Now, again, coaching, I'm sure, is a problem, too. I don't love Sirianni. I don't love the offensive coordinator. Clearly, he got fired. But at the end of the day, if you've only had one great year with one great coordinator who looks like a star, then you're probably not that great. And at the end of the day, I kind of know what I get with Dak. He's pretty consistent. Now, he's consistently not quite good enough, but he's good to get you. First off, they captured the division last year. They won the division, and good enough to get you 10-plus wins a season. So, you know, I'm sure they're going to pay him more than I would, but at the end of the day, you can hang your hat on the fact that I think it's completely fair. You're paying to still have the best quarterback in your division. Prescott's still the best quarterback in that division. All right, Jesse, ask the last one.
All right. Let me get the specific question out. All right. Fair or foul? Mm-hmm. The Yankees are the favorite to win the AL East with all their additions.
I'm going to go foul here. They're still old. The pitching seems like it's mostly Garrett Cole and I don't know what else. I know they added Soto, which helps a ton. Judge kind of had problems staying healthy last year. And the Orioles are just descending. That's all it comes down to. Where do you see the regression for Baltimore? They're all young players. They're all only going to get better. They have more kids, by the way, that they're adding to this roster. Grayson Rodriguez, after a disastrous start, high-end prospect, completely turned it on at the end of last year. It looks like he's figured it out now and adjusted to the majors. Adley Rutschman might as well have been a major leaguer the minute he stepped in. I just don't understand why the Yankees are the favorite. Probably just because they're the Yankees and the things they add. But I don't understand where the regression comes for Baltimore. I don't see it. These are all high-end prospects. They're not out of nowhere. All these kids were highly regarded, have proven at the major league level, and there's no reason to think most of them aren't only going to get better. And like I said, they have even more to add during the season. They added a pitcher, too, I thought. Who did they add?
Orioles or the Yankees?
I thought the Orioles added something this offseason.
Corbin Burns.
Thank you. Yeah, and you add a front-of-the-rotation starter, a proven Cy Young contender in Corbin Burns as well. Like, I don't see it. I'm completely foul. This team should not be the favorite in the AL East.
Mm. This one was my hardest one. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be.
Okay.
Because I think this one is a foul pole scraper, if it is fair. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the additions are for the Yankees. I mean, some of them are big and sexy. The Juan Soto, like, you know, that really, it really protects Judge in your lineup, even, you know, with the injuries, he could replace some of that. Assuming he gets injured. You brought in Alex Verdugo, good outfielder. I think, you know, him being a lefty in that ballpark could help bump those offensive numbers. And he's not an offensive liability by any means. Although the lows he can reach are pretty deep. But, you know, I like the Stroman, Trent Grisham, whatever. The reason I say I could see this being fair and hit the foul pole and being Yankees are indeed the favorite is because the Orioles are still very young. Mm-hmm. And although, you know, proven commodities, like, you know, I think Santander is a proven MLB player. Mountcastle is a proven MLB player. Mullen's proven MLB player. And then you bring in Corbin Burns. It's like, yes, stud, ace, Cy Young potential. And all the ALNL probably doesn't really matter that much anymore with the whole universal DH. It is still interesting to see him on a new team after being on the Brewers for a while. It's not a slam dunk.
Okay.
But, you know, I still think even if he's not what they want him to be, I still think that's one of the better pitchers in the league in Corbin Burns. But again, them being so young, I wonder how will a lot of these guys, especially the ones that came up last year, like Adley Rutschman, have they really seen the adjustment yet? And do I think Adley Rutschman, I'm not trying to call him out or anything, do I think he'll be a proven, one of the better catcher, offensive catchers for his whole career? Yeah. It's just like, have they seen the adjustment and could they take like that sophomore slump, third-year slump, take that step back when they can see a real adjustment? And I wonder if, like, you know, last year was nice, that was a nice high. Did they almost reach their potential a little too soon type of thing?
Okay.
I'm not going to say 100% fair, but I'm
I get you.
Leaning a little bit.
Okay. My thing is, I don't know if Stroman in the AL East.
Why? He's been on two teams in the AL East.
I guess.
Hasn't he been on three? Was he a Ray?
No.
I'll look that up. I know he's a Blue Jay and an Oriole.
Yeah, I think so. You're right. But he fell off badly at the end of last year.
With injuries?
I don't even think it was before he got injured, though.
Well, no, he had I think it was his hip.
I'll be honest.
He had a hip injury, and that's why he started to blow up.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll be honest. I've just never been the biggest Marcus Stroman fan, so maybe that's part of why my opinion on this. I don't know. I just – is it helpful to add at least someone?
That's a good three.
It is. But I just still think they're so thin at the pitching. Like, it was such a problem.
Starting pitching.
Yeah, the starting pitching. It was such a problem for the last year. They were so mediocre a lot of the time last year. Listen, I think they're going to be a very much improved team over what they were last year. I think they'll be in the playoffs. I think they finished second in the division. But I don't think just because you added Stroman and Soto that makes you better, when I just think the Orioles have a deeper team for 162 games. And as I said, a younger team, which should be healthier. And as I said, a lot of ascending players. So, yeah. Soto helps the Judge thing. I understand that. He really does. And he makes them significantly better team than they were last year. I just don't think it's enough to be better than Baltimore.
It's an intimidating thing for young players.
Yeah.
Going against the Yankees.
You
those
know, maybe.
Pinstripes still.
Maybe it helps you when you won the division last year and you can sell them on that. Like, maybe. They don't believe in you. Maybe. You're not the favorites. The big bad Yankees are still the favorites despite everything you did last year.
Well, I know no matter what the Yankees do or anyone else does, the Yankees will always be Vegas's favorite going into the season to win the division. That's a traditional thing no matter what. They're always going to do that. But this year they have a case.
I mean, the other reason a lot of time they end up being the favorite is just because fans bet on them so much that the line moves also. That's the other thing.
Okay.
So that's what happened 2 years ago when the Jays opened up as the favorite, and then just so many people bet the Yankees, they became the favorite. But yeah, with that, we're getting ready to finish things up. Jesse Caulfield, end us with the Darwin Award, please.
Hold on. Let me get the camera out.
Okay. All right, drum roll, please.
All right. This week's Darwin Award winner is Adam Ruzicka, prospect for the Arizona Coyotes. Why? Well, man did some cocaine on video, and I didn't see it. I couldn't find it. The internet scrubbed it, but the right people saw it, and he's getting cut. And to be honest, one, come on. You got to be more subtle with these things. Got to be more aware. Look around. You're a famous person.
Yeah.
You got to be aware of who's around you. Are there any cameras before I... but also, you know, I do want to give, like, an honorary to the Arizona Coyotes, but it's because, of course, this happened
to the Arizona Coyotes.
Because everyone knows, if you're in the NHL, you know that everyone's nose in the NHL is full of coke. Mm. Every single last one of them. Not literally, but a lot of them. They all have a coke problem. They all know it. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. And of all teams to get caught, of all players, he's on the Coyotes, who, again, have also had trouble. I mean, amongst have had so much trouble with so many things. The financials, the you're got kicked out of your stadium. And, man, just several times in the past 5 years, I want to say, you just keep drafting people that get in trouble, and you got to keep cutting them. One of the reasons you can't complete the rebuild, although it's trending in the right direction, is because every time you draft a high-end player, there's something wrong with him, and you got to just cut him. Well, we can't have that one anymore. Can't remember his name, but there was that defenseman that, like, bullied that kid. It's like, we're going to use a first-round pick on him. Well, you had to get rid of him because he's just that terrible of a person. It happened again. Now he's got you got a guy with a coke problem. Again, they all do, but this one had such a bad problem, it wound up on the internet.
Yeah, like, just go to the bathroom like everybody else does it, dude.
Or, like, be smart enough to be like, oh, crap, they got a video of me. I need help.
Yeah.
You don't even have to really think you need help, but pretend you need help.
Just to save face.
You probably do, because you're an NHL player, which means you have a coke problem. So you probably do need help, but at least pretend to think you need one. So then they won't cut you.
Yeah.
You just get sent to the awful, awful NHL assistance program. Well, they'll take all your money and then eventually cut you anyway. But in the media's eyes, you'll look okay, and eventually another team will sign you.
Yes. That is a good point. Yes. So he messed up twice.
Yeah.
He messed up doing coke, not in the bathroom, where he could get caught on video. And then he messed up by not immediately getting ahead of it and being like, I got a problem, guys.
Yeah.
I need help.
Yeah.
I'm the victim.
Got to go to the coke room. Yeah.
All right. That has been it for this week's Slow Your Roll. Congratulations to Adam. What is it?
Adam Ruzicka.
Ruzicka. For this week's Darwin Award winner. Have a great rest of your week, ladies and gentlemen.